there's an angle formed between the relative wind and the chord line. It's acute angle A. That is the angle of attack. The angle of attack is formed between the chord line and the relative wind. That's it. Wasn't that easy? Let's go to figure 2. Figure 2 is a load factor chart that shows you the angle of bank graduated from 0 degrees to 90 degrees and the load factor going from 1G to infinity. The thing to note about this chart is notice the curved line that starts at 1 and it curves up to infinity. Notice that that line crosses 60 degrees at 2G's and it crosses right at 70 degrees at 3G's. Those are the two points on this chart where you want to focus. And it's important because it's showing it that as your bank increases from 60 to 70 degrees, you go up a whole other G. That's a lot. So at a 60 degree bank, if an airplane weighs 2,300 pounds, what approximate weight would the airplane structure be required to support during a 60 degree bank turn while maintaining altitude? Well, that's 2 G's. 2 times 2,300 is 4,600 pounds. That's the answer. You multiply the weight of the airplane by the load factor, and that's the amount of weight that the aircraft structure would be required to support. Let's go on now to figure number 3. Figure number 3 shows us 3 altimeters. The altimeters have a large pointer, a small pointer, and a tiny pointer. That little tiny pointer on the first altimeter is just past the number 1. Medium-sized pointer is between the number 0 and 1, and the big pointer is on 5. So the first one is above 10,000 feet. It's indicating 10,500 feet, just like the question asks on the written test. The second altimeter is reading 14,500 feet because the little tiny, teeny-weeny pointer is between 1 and 2, so that means it's over 10,000 feet. And the third one, it looks like the little tiny pointer is just about on the first number 1, so it's coming up on 10,000 feet. It is indicating 9,500 feet. Now, in aviation phraseology, that would be 9,500 feet for altimeter number 3. Altimeter number 2 is 14,500 feet, and altimeter number 1 is 10,500 feet. I do have a couple of questions on altimeters before we go on to figure number 4. I'd like to review those with you. If a flight is made from an area of high pressure into an area of lower pressure without the altimeter setting being adjusted, the altimeter would read higher than the actual altitude above sea level. You don't want your altimeter reading higher than you actually are. That's not a good thing. Remember, from high to cold, or hot to low, look out below. When will true altitude be lower than indicated altitude? In colder than standard temperature. If you change your altimeter setting from 30.11 down to 29.96, what is the approximate change in the indication? If you decrease the number, it's going to read lower. How much lower? Subtract 29.96 from 30.11. Multiply it times 1,000, you get 150 feet. Altimeter will indicate 150 feet lower. How do variations in temperature affect the altimeter? Well, pressure levels are raised on warm days, and the indicated altitude is lower than true altitude. What is true altitude? True altitude is the vertical distance of the aircraft above sea level. What is absolute altitude? It's the vertical distance of the aircraft above the surface. What is density altitude? Density altitude is pressure altitude corrected for non-standard temperature. And what is pressure altitude? Pressure altitude is the altitude indicated when the barometric pressure scale is set to 29.92. Under what condition is indicated altitude the same as true altitude? In fact, let me go one step further. Under what condition is pressure altitude equal to true altitude? One more evolution. Under what condition is pressure altitude and density altitude the same value? For all these questions, it's the same answer. When standard temperature conditions exist, or when at sea level under standard conditions. If an altimeter setting is not available before the flight, what should you set your altitude to? You should set it to the elevation of the departure area. Another way of stating the same question is, prior to takeoff, the altimeter should be set to which altitude or altimeter setting? The current local altimeter setting, if available, or the departure airport elevation. When should you set the altimeter to 29.92 when climbing to cruising flight level? 18,000 feet MSL. And finally, the altimeter setting is the value to which the barometric pressure scale on the altimeter is set, so the altimeter indicates true altitude at field elevation. Which condition would cause the altimeter to indicate a lower altitude than true altitude? Air temperature warmer than standard. Now let's move on to figure 4. 4 is an airspeed indicator. It has 4 color-coded markings. It's got a red line, a yellow arc, a green arc, and a white arc. Question: what is the full flap operating range for the airplane? Notice behind the arrow pointer there's a small H. That airspeed indicator is actually reading miles per hour. So the white arc goes from 60 miles an hour to 100 miles an hour, the full flap operating range of the airplane. The yellow arc is the caution range, in which you should only operate in smooth air. And the red radial line there is the never exceed speed. So if I were to ask you, what is the caution range of the airplane? The caution range would be from 165 miles an hour to 210 miles an hour? That's the answer. The caution range is the yellow arc, and that's the area in which you may operate the aircraft only in smooth air. What is the maximum structural cruising speed? The maximum structural cruising speed is the green arc. The upper limit of the green arc is what's referred to as VNO, maximum structural cruising speed. And that's right at 165 miles an hour. Let's talk about the white arc. I mentioned the white arc is the flap operating range for full flaps. Well, the high end of the white arc is the maximum speed you can operate with full flaps. What about the bottom part of the white arc? That is the power off stalling speed with wing flaps and landing gear in the landing configuration, the lower limit of the white arc. Okay, so we've talked about the white arc, we've talked about the yellow. The red is the never exceed speed. We talked about where the yellow and the green arc meet. What about the bottom of the green arc? The bottom of the green arc is the power off stalling speed in a specified configuration, lower limit of the green arc. Okay, we've covered all the questions for figure 4. Let's move on now to figure 5. There is one other question. Actually, there's a couple of questions about the airspeed that I want to go over with you. Before we move on to figure 5, I want to go over a couple more questions that pertain to airspeed, but that don't specifically reference figure 4, and they are the V-speeds. I want to talk about the V-speeds. VLE is the maximum landing gear extended speed. VFE is the maximum flaps extended speed. VA is an important speed that is not color-coded on the airspeed indicator. VA is maneuvering speed. VNO, we talked about VNO, it's where the green and the yellow arc meet. VNO is defined as the maximum structural cruising speed. I asked what the stalling speed was in a specified configuration. That's the bottom of the green arc. There's also a V-speed that corresponds with that, and that's called VS1. There's also VSO. And so VS1 is the stalling speed, or the minimum steady flight speed at which the aircraft is controllable in a specified configuration, bottom of the green arc. There's also VSO, which is the stalling speed, or minimum steady flight speed, at which the aircraft is controllable in the landing configuration. So that's what VSO is defined as. And that's the bottom of the white arc. After liftoff, what airspeed would you fly to gain the most altitude over a given period of time? VY, best rate of climb. The way you remember VY, best rate, and VX, best angle, the X in VX is more of an angle. There's four angles in the X. One on the top, one on the bottom, one on the left, one on the right. That's the best angle of climb, VX. VY is best rate of climb. And just remember, X angle, VX, best angle of climb. Gives you the most amount of altitude over a given distance traveled. VY gives you the most altitude over a given period of time. Before we move on to figure 5, let me ask you a few more questions about the airspeed, the pedostatic system actually, because the airspeed indicator, the vertical speed indicator, and the altimeter are all connected to the pedostatic system. If the pedo tube becomes blocked, what instrument would be affected? Airspeed indicator. Which instruments would become inoperative if the pedo tube becomes blocked? Well, the pedo tube connects to the airspeed indicator, so it would become inoperative. Which instrument would become inoperative if the static vents became clogged? Well, the static vents connect to the airspeed indicator, the altimeter, and the vertical speed indicator. So the airspeed, altimeter, and vertical speed would become inoperative if the static vents were to become blocked. If the pedo tube and the static vents were to become clogged, which instruments would be affected? Again, the same group, the airspeed indicator, the altimeter, and the vertical speed indicator. So the pedo system provides pressure for the airspeed indicator, and the static system provides pressure for the airspeed indicator, altimeter, and the vertical speed indicator. Taking a look at figure number 5, we see a turn coordinator. The turn coordinator provides an indication of the movement of the aircraft about the yaw and roll axis. Figure 6 shows a heading indicator. The thing you need to know about a heading indicator is, to receive accurate indications during flight from a heading indicator, the instrument must be periodically realigned with the magnetic compass as the gyro precesses. Let's move on to figure number 7. Figure number 7 shows an attitude indicator. The thing you've got to know about figure 7 is, think of a candy bar called the horizon bar. The horizon bar, the relationship between the miniature airplane and the horizon bar, is how you interpret this instrument. So anytime you get a question about figure 7, if the question asks how should you determine your bank from the attitude indicator, or if the question asks the proper adjustment to be made on the attitude indicator is to align the answer always involves the word horizon bar. Align the miniature airplane to the horizon bar. The way you read this is you read the relationship between the miniature airplane to the deflected horizon bar. If the answer has horizon bar in it, it's the correct answer. They're not all this easy. Okay, let's go to figure 8, the density altitude chart. This figure requires that you analyze the chart and understand that there's a pressure altitude conversion where you have to use interpolation to get the answer correct. So if you get an intermediate altimeter setting, you need to look at the difference between the pressure altitude conversion factor of the previous and the next setting that's available, and then look at the difference between the two. If it's an intermediate setting that's exactly halfway, that's great, that's real easy. If it's not halfway, you have to interpolate. Well, you'd have to interpolate even if it is halfway, but the interpolation is a little bit trickier if it's not halfway. For example, most of the questions require that you go interpolate exactly halfway between the values. There is one question, though, where they give you an altimeter setting of 28.22, and you'd look at the conversion for 28.2 and 28.3. Well, the difference is 97 feet if you subtract the difference between the two values, and you have to determine the amount of difference to be subtracted from the 28.2. So if you take the difference and you divide it by 10, and then you take 2/10 of that, you'll get the correct answer. The way this chart works is it requires that you go into the altimeter setting and get a pressure-altitude conversion factor from an intermediate altimeter setting, which requires interpolation. Once you get that, then you can come up with a pressure-altitude value, and you take your pressure-altitude value and you impose it on the chart so that it's parallel to the diagonal lines. Once you have that line in place on the chart, then you can enter the chart from the bottom through the air temperature scale, go up to your pressure altitude line, stop, and then make a left and exit the chart to the left. That'll give you your approximate density altitude. You may have to find density altitude for two different sets of pressure altitude values. The question may ask, what's the effect of a temperature decrease and a pressure altitude increase? So you may have to work two problems and find out what the answer is to one problem, what the answer is to the other problem, and then answer the question accordingly. There are a couple of generic temperature pressure questions, and the relationship that you need to know is that when the outside air temperature is warmer than standard, the density altitude is higher than pressure altitude. The worst combination in terms of performance would be high temperature, high relative humidity, and high density altitude. Those all reduce takeoff performance. The factor that increases the density altitude the most would be the increase in temperature. The factor which would tend to increase the density altitude at a given airport would be an increase in ambient temperature. High density altitude reduces aircraft climb performance. Let's look at figure number 9. Control position for taxi. Here, you're shown 4 different possible wind scenarios. And what I want to know is, how should I position the flight controls while taxiing a tricycle gear equipped airplane into a left quartering headwind? So area A is the area from which the wind is coming. How do I want to position the controls when I taxi my tricycle gear airplane? Well, I want neutral elevator, and I want the left aileron up. I want the effect of the wind to push down on the wing to stabilize the airplane. So I want left aileron up, elevator neutral. That's what you need to know for the test. For practical application, if the wind were coming from area B, I'd want neutral elevator, and I'd want the right aileron up. What if it were coming from area D? Well, then I'd want down elevator, and I'd want the right aileron down. And if it were coming from area C, I'd want down elevator, and I'd want the left aileron down. So if it's a right or left quartering tailwind, I want to dive away from it. I want to turn the, hold the controls with your thumbs up, push forward, and dive away from the wind. In other words, you turn the control wheel to the left and push forward if the wind is coming from area D. I'm diving away from it. Coming from area C, I push forward and turn to the right. I dive away from it. And then if it's coming from area A or B, I want to keep my elevator neutral, and I want the aileron up on the side from which the wind is blowing. The most critical wind situation is a quartering tailwind. There's one question that you need to know that's a flight training question, but it's on the written test. To minimize the side loads placed on the landing gear during touchdown, you should keep the longitudinal axis of the aircraft parallel with the direction of its motion. Well, how are you going to do that? If you have a crosswind, the airplane is going to want to drift downwind while you're landing. Well, you correct for that by lowering the wing that's upwind, and the airplane then turns into the wind like a weather vane, and then you apply opposite rudder to keep the longitudinal axis of the airplane parallel with the direction of its motion. You'll learn this by practicing it in the air, but there is a question on the test regarding that, and I wanted to cover it since we're talking about control positions for taxi. It is relative. Let's look at figure 12. METAR report for Wink, Boise, LAX, Midway, and JFK. I found six questions regarding figure 12. What you need to know is to how to interpret this. And if you were to look at this figure 12 and ask yourself which stations reporting have VFR weather, you need to know that VFR weather means the ceiling is better than 1,000 feet and visibility is better than 3 miles. Well, you have to ask yourself, well, what's VFR? Well, VFR means it's not IFR. IFR is ceilings less than 1,000 feet and or visibility less than 3 miles. The three stations that have VFR weather are INK, BOI, and LAX. Wink, Boise, and LAX have VFR weather. The ceiling is the lowest broken or overcast layer or vertical visibility into an obstruction. For example, what are the current conditions at Chicago Midway? Chicago Midway, wind is 320 at 5, visibility is 1.5 statute miles, rain, overcast 700 feet. The ceiling is 700 overcast, 1.5 miles rain. Winds are true. Winds are relative to true, and the velocity is in knots. So what's the wind direction at JFK? 180 degrees true at 4 knots. The wind at Wink is 110 degrees at 12, gusting to 18. And what does the RAB35 mean over in the remarks for Midway? Rain began at 1835 Zulu. Let's look at figure 14. Looking at figure 14, we see a pilot report. A couple of things about the pilot report. As you read the pilot report, you find that the base and the tops of the overcast layer are reported by the pilot to be 7,200 MSL and 8,900 MSL. The wind and the temperature at 12,000 MSL, as reported by the pilot, is 080 degrees at 21 knots, minus 7 Celsius. The intensity of the turbulence is reported as light from 5,500 feet to 7,200 feet, and the intensity and type of icing reported is light to moderate rime icing. If you were asked if the terrain elevation is 1,295 feet, what is the height above the ground of the base of the ceiling, you'd go into the pilot report, you'd get the base of the ceiling from the pilot report. The pilot report is saying that the base of the first cloud layer is 1,800 MSL, so if you subtract 1,295 from 1,800, you get 505 AGL. The base of the ceiling is 505 feet AGL, above ground level. Let's look at figure 15. Figure 15 are a couple of terminal forecasts. Did you know the only type of cloud forecast in the terminal area forecast is cumulonimbus? Anyway, let's look at this. Take a look at the forecast for Memphis between 10 Zulu and 12 Zulu. You'll see that the visibility at Memphis is forecast to be 3 statute miles. The forecast winds for Memphis from 16 Zulu until the end of the forecast, variable at 6 knots. If you look at the forecast for Oklahoma City, look at the from group. See the from group? It forecasts for the hours from 1600 to 22 Zulu. It says becoming, BECMG 2224. That means between 22 and 24 Zulu, the wind is forecast to be from 180 degrees at 10 knots. Look at Oklahoma City and look at the from group. It's forecast for the hours from 16 Zulu to 22 Zulu with the wind from 180 degrees at 10. Don't go past the from group. If you go to the becoming group, that's a whole different situation and you'll get the wrong answer. The question asks you to specifically refer to the from group. from the hours of 16 to 22, 180 at 10. There's another question that asks you, in the TAF from Oklahoma City, the sky, the clear sky becomes, well, it becomes overcast at 2,000 feet during the forecast period between 22 and 24 Zulu. So if you read on along that line, you'll see it says becoming 22 to 24. It gives you the wind, it gives you the visibility, the rain showers. Finally, we get to the ceiling, overcast 2,000. The sky becomes overcast at 2,000 feet during the forecast period between 22 and 24 Zulu. Look at Oklahoma City now. During the time period from 06 Zulu to 08 Zulu, now that's where you go to the bottom line. It says becoming 06-08. What visibility is forecast for Oklahoma City? Well, if you read the line, becoming 06-08, go past the wind, there's your visibility. P6SM means the forecast visibility is greater than 6 statute miles. You could say it means plus 6 statute miles.